These are the numbers that are troubling for the president. Here's one from the New Times Siena College poll. Is President Biden too old to be an effective president? Among all voters, 73% say yes, 25% say no. Here's the troubling part. Even in his own party, the president needs big Democratic turnout in the fall. More than half, 56% of Democrats say they think he's too old to be an effective president. 43% say no. So that is one challenge for the president as he runs out the primary season, as he gives that big speech Thursday night. Address that. The problems are deeper for the president. Again, he is the incumbent president. 24% of Americans say the country's on the right track. Two-thirds say it is not. 65% say the country is on the wrong track as the president prepares to deliver his State of the Union address. One more. Incumbents are often judged by their approval rating. You start to get 8 months out from an election, that's a problem. That's a problem. That's the number the president has to change. 36% approve of his performance right now in office, 61% disapprove. That means a lot of Democrats.
But Republican voters don't vote that way. They don't vote based on economics or based on the benefits they're getting economically from the president. They're increasingly, from the Tea Party on, they're voting on race. They're voting on this idea of an invasion of brown people over the border, the idea that they can't get whatever job they want. A black person got it, therefore drive all the blacks out of the colleges, get rid of DEI. That is what they're voting on. They're just voting specifically on racial animus. Which, at this stage, it isn't about economics.
No. I mean, if you look at some of these exit polls, I mean, I live in Virginia. Immigration was the number one issue. Yeah. Again, these could change in Virginia.
Well, Virginia does have a border with West Virginia. Very, very contested area.
Build the wall. Like, what?
My larger reaction is disappointment. States should be able, under our Constitution, to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists. And ultimately, this decision leaves open the door for Congress to act, to pass authorizing legislation. But we know that Congress is a nearly non-functioning body. So ultimately, it will be up to the American voters to save our democracy in November.
In our guidance today, we were saying when you are sick, importantly, do stay home when you're sick. Make sure to get tested and get treatment. When you're thinking about returning to normal activities, wait at least 24 hours until your fever is gone and your symptoms are improving. That means if you were feeling tired or body aches or had a cough, you want to see those things improve. Then, for an additional 5 days, take some additional precautions. You could still have the potential of shedding virus even after those 24 hours. So there are different kinds of tools folks can use, whether that's physical distancing, ventilation, masks. We want to make sure you're still protecting those around you. But remember, this virus is spreading even before we know that you have COVID.
In fact, some of the small snack companies, you won't and think you won't even notice what they're doing when they charge you just as much for the same size bag of potato chips, only has a hell of a lot fewer chips in it. I'll tell you who did notice: the Cookie Monster. He pointed out his cookies are getting smaller, paying the same price. I was stunned when I found out that's what actually happened.
And welcome back, my friends, to episode number 172 of the Unregulated Podcast. I have the misfortune of being Michael McKenna, your co-host.
And I am Tom Pyle, your other co-host. And you forgot to say today is Wednesday, March 6th.
I
but that's okay. Otherwise, you did a great job intro. It's not as easy as you thought it was.
It's not complicated.
There's a lot to remember, man. There's a lot to remember.
Not only if you care. Go ahead.
Speaking of remembering, COVID is still apparently a thing. I'm skipping way forward in the clips, but are you kidding me with this?
Why?
This is like, now it's, oh, well, you can go, if you test and treat, you can go back to work within 24 hours. But you know, just
there's a lot of forward momentum.
Still listening to this stuff.
There's a lot of forward momentum bought by pharmaceutical companies. So yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm a little horrified, but I'm not surprised.
So Joe Biden is blaming corporations for Bidenflation, for shrinkflation. It's all there for the Cookie Monster is not happy.
Wow.
Did that not
sound weird right at the end? The Cookie Monster. I'm like, what?
Like,
I have never so looked forward to a State of the Union as I'm looking forward to this thing tomorrow.
I am not watching. You can watch for us.
I'm definitely gonna watch. I'm gonna watch all of it. It's gonna be great.
I am not prepared, physically, mentally, or otherwise to manage.
You should probably count how many times.
All right, let's do the over and under. How long is it gonna be?
Oh, it'll be. You know, he's a bit of a yapper. Not as bad as the previous guy, but 84 minutes.
84. All right, I'll take the under on that. He's not gonna last 84 minutes. Let's be specific. If you don't include all the clapping.
No. From the moment the guy says,
are you going with the clapping?
From the moment the ceremonial master says, ladies and gentlemen, the president of the United States, from that moment until he says, God bless America. God bless America. Between those two things, it's at least 84 minutes.
I'm going to still take the under. I'm going to take the under still.
Okay. I hope you're right.
John King has rattled through the most recent New York Times bombshell polling that shows that President Biden is lagging pretty much across the board. He is losing. We'll talk about the Biden coalition later because you have a competitor in the Wall Street Journal. He's losing across the board.
I don't really have any competition, Tom. You should know that.
The only demographic that largely hasn't changed are whites, actually. They're voting about the same. But even though whites are voting about the same, Trump's up by maybe like 8 to 10 over same time in the run-up to 2020, which means he's cutting into almost every demo.
Yeah,
that he didn't have in the last go round.
Yeah, I mean reality is this: the Democratic leads among the working class, black, white, and Hispanic, and the Democratic inroads among suburban females, college educated females. The erosion on one is legitimate, and the cap, the ceiling on the other is legitimate, and that's just the math, right?
You have to take into account that those are the ones who are exhausted.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah, look, I'm exhausted too.
Wait, what was that lady? What merch was she selling? Hysteria merch?
Hysteria? No, it wasn't hysteria. It was something else. It began with an R. Well, whatever. We'll figure it out. The math is really the math is important here, and I want to take a detour and mention it. That about more than 2/3 of the people in this country are identified as working class, right? That is, having not a college degree. And on game day, voting day, right? About 65% of voters are working class. If you're a Democratic strategist, that fact, right? That your end that's growing is 35% of the voting population, the college educated kids. That's a bad end to be growing. And if you're a Republican strategist, you're thinking what you always think, you know, can I overcharge this guy and do incompetent work for an indefinite amount of time and still try to win? Sorry. That's going to get me in trouble.
Oh, that was good. All right. Well, with all of that in their face, the pundits and crack quote journalists at MSNBC are just, they're beside themselves, Michael. They cannot believe. I live in Virginia. I can't believe immigration is the number one issue. Oh, well, it's just next to West Virginia, you know.
Yeah, I found that to be particularly disturbing, given that, of course, the people in question, they don't actually live in Virginia. They live in Arlington. And the great thing about Arlington is you can drive to Virginia from Arlington, but you ain't from Virginia. So
it's also
the idea that you're making fun of West Virginia, too, that's something you're allowed to do if you live in Richmond and maybe Roanoke, but nowhere else. Nowhere else.
Well, you know, they say that about Austin, too. The good thing about Austin is no matter where you go, you can drive to Texas.
Seriously, you're surrounded by Texas. Yeah.
So the Democrat Colorado Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold, was very disappointed in the Supreme Court's decision to nullify any attempts by the states to disqualify oath-breaking insurrectionists from the state ballots.
Yeah, the problem with that sentence is there so far nobody's been charged with insurrection, let alone found guilty of insurrection. And the assumption behind that statement is that somehow this country is littered with insurrectionists trying to run for president. And I was just like, this is where the sloppiness that gets embedded into people in the public education system is not helping this country. It's just not. I can't believe a grown person managed that entire sentence without once thinking, what are my embedded assumptions here? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I do agree with her on one count, and that is she referred to Congress as nearly non-functioning body. That is close to accurate. Fairly close to accurate these days. So so she's a little upset that, you know, even though they opened the door for the Congress to make those types of decisions, she's not optimistic that Jamie Raskin will succeed in his legislative attempts to deny the voters the ability to vote for or against Donald Trump. So.
Shut up, Tom. We're defending democracy by putting the other guy in jail.
Do you?
Or taking him off the ballot. Either one. Whatever we can do here.
Did you notice that a lot of the pro, how do I phrase this? The established media like, largely ignored the 9-0.
Yeah, the legacy media. I will point out that right here on this here podcast, one of us, I think it was me, maybe it was you, could be both of us, predicted a 9-0 Supreme Court ruling. Had to be. It had to be, right? Anything else would have been, you know, the de facto end of the country. I mean, they had to give it 9-0.
Yeah, this is obviously frivolous. And then, of course, the Supreme Court will be taking up the immunity question here in April. I believe it is scheduled for April, and they could rule. I mean, they usually trickle out their results in the summer, right? But they could push it out at any time. So
you're going to say they don't respond to anybody. It's a beautiful thing about being a lawyer in this country. Apparently you're the only person above the law. Ironic, isn't it?
All right. You have any announcements this week?
I have a couple. I have a couple. I want to give a shout out to Anne. I'm glad that things are going well with a new, relatively new child. I'm glad things are going well with, I'm going to guess his name is Jay. Whatever your husband's name is, Ann, you know his name.
You keep
Jay.
You keep botching that.
Whatever. I think his name is Jim, right? James? Yeah. Anyway, that, and I want to thank Brian Kay for the nice things you said about a couple of columns I wrote. I thought they were pretty good too, so I very much appreciate the confirmation of my own bias. I want to ask my, what is he? I want to ask the young man married to my niece, Rose, Rob, you know, it's perfectly okay if you're at Mass and you see us to come sit with us, just so you know, Rob. It's perfectly okay. You don't have to run out the door.
I don't want to probe that one. You have to do that on the podcast is a little bizarre.
He was babysitting my little grandniece there at church the other day. And, you know, he didn't even look around and see us. I was just like, dude, come on, man. I looked over. I was like, that's Rob. Anyway, that's one last thing, of course, as it is March 6th. It is, of course, the 188th anniversary of the fall of the Alamo in San Antonio, Texas.
You're blowing my this day in history.
Well, I was going to know it anyway. Trust me.
All right.
Trust me.
Okay. There you go.
And it could be. I encourage everybody to read my column because it could be right on my tagline. I have a little something about the Alamo. So anyway, go ahead.
Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna.
Yeah, I don't, you know, there's something weird about the Texans. And first off, most of the people at the Alamo, not most, but the plurality were, of course, Virginians. The thing I don't get about the Texans, you're welcome. The thing I don't get, this Tennessee volunteer nonsense. You look at the wall where they have the names of all the dead guys and where they're from. They're all from Virginia. There's like 27 guys from Tennessee and 150 guys from Virginia. Anyway, they should celebrate the Battle of San Jacinto, not the Alamo. You lost the Alamo, dudes. Move along. You won at San Jacinto.
No. Remember the Alamo.
You know, whatever. Why would you remember your losses and forget your victories? Who does that? They're not right.
Well, there's one before 1836, and that was 1820 on this day. On this day in 1820, a president, James Monroe, signed
the Monroe Doctrine, the Missouri Compromise.
Missouri Compromise, which allowed Missouri to be admitted to the Union as the 24th state, which led to, or is perceived to lead to, the beginning of the sectional conflict over the extension of slavery.
Yeah.
1899, sir.
1899?
Yes, sir.
Wow. I don't know.
Salicylic, thank you. Acid is patented by one Felix Hoffmann at the German company Bayer.
Yep, aspirin. Do you know to this day they still don't know how it actually works?
Really?
They don't understand the mechanism of how it works.
You mean like the low dose for the heart attack thing, or
just, no? They don't understand why that, you know, how that somehow lessens pain, but they know it does, but they don't really understand the mechanism of how it does.
Oh, okay, I did not know that. Okay, and then lastly, in 1981,
March 6, 1981,
this gentleman, who was then known as the quote-unquote most trusted man in America,
Walter Cronkite, quit.
Signed off as the longtime anchor.
The only news anchor in the history of the world to surrender a country in time of war. When he declared that the Americans had lost Vietnam after Tet. And everybody's like, what the hell? I don't.
Now, please tell me Dan Rather didn't replace him.
Yeah, Dan Rather replaced him.
Oh, Lord. Huh? That guy. All right, let's do politics. We got a Super Tuesday rundown for you. You want to get the show started? Got any thoughts about the Trump thump on Super Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm really hard-pressed to care much about it. I mean, it's, you know, it's like watching the Yankees play a little league team. You know, it's in doubt for like an inning or two, but
well, that used to be the case. But
that's what I'm saying, it's in doubt for an inning or two now.
Oh, although everyone is raving about your buddy Mike Stanton these days, though they say he's looking better than ever. So, which means he'll probably not get injured until May.
Looking better than ever. What is this? Like, is he going for a video shoot? Is he playing baseball?
All right, so for those who live under a rock, Donald J. Trump took every state on Super Tuesday, with the exception of Vermont, a fairly significant landslide in most cases. There were some numbers, though, for Haley, that other than Vermont. Here are a couple highlights. In Burlington, of course, she took the county 75-17. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, she took the county by a whopping 74%. Arlington, Virginia, 74. Charlottesville, 75. And Alexandria, a little bit lagging with Alexandria, Virginia, at 71%. So she was strong.
Yeah. Yeah. It
in five counties.
I mean, I'm pretty confident about half the folks who voted for her are actually Democrats.
Yeah. I mean, well, that was the point I was trying to make
across the entire primary, not just last night, but across the entire primary. And that's fine. But, you know, it's partly the basis of a party transfer, a transformational party changing run, right?
And of course, she announced earlier today that she is exiting the Republican presidential race and urged Donald Trump to, quote, earn the support of the those very voters you just described who backed her. So,
yeah, whatever. Just, I don't fully understand people sometimes. I really don't. The ego is a powerful thing, I suppose.
Further fallout from Super Tuesday. Dean Phillips.
Did he quit?
Did he quit?
Oh, good.
Yes, sir. He has suspended his campaign as of today as well.
I never understood why he was running either. I didn't understand either of these guys. I understand RFK, right? He has nothing better to do. But these people, they still have some useful life left.
He has endorsed Biden.
Well, of course.
In spite of all of his criticisms. He still ended up endorsing. There's only one choice, he said, in the expected matchup between Biden and Republican Donald Trump.
Well, obviously, he thought as recently as 24 hours ago there were two choices, right? Him or Biden or Trump. So three choices, right?
So no labels. No labels ticket for Phillips.
Does anybody read these speeches before they just talk of before they give them? Yeah, the no labels guys have dried up and vanished. It's too bad. I'm gonna miss them.
So the only thing that's left now is potentially RFK Jr. on the Libertarian ticket, because he's flirting with that. Some of the hardline Libertarians are not happy about it, but he's not the only party switcher in the news. I don't know if you saw this.
No, who else switched?
Don Blankenship's running as a Democrat.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
West Virginia, former West Virginia coal magnate, and I guess you would call him a.
Isn't he a convict? Didn't he go to jail?
Ex-con.
Yeah. Ex-con. Okay. Well, there you go. He fits right in.
Don Blankenship is running on the Democratic ticket in West Virginia as an attempt to take a Senate seat. So, not a lot of Democratic credentials under his belt, but hey, whatever. So,
I bet you he voted Democratic. I bet you. But I mean, he's not.
Back in the day, everyone did in West Virginia, right?
Right. I mean, he's not like Bill Cassidy, but, you know, he's got to be close. I mean, he's got to have some background in there.
So
he's the John Bro of American
Samoa, just so you're aware.
Yeah, well, they're like 25 votes, 30 votes, something like that.
Apparently, he's not very well liked in American Samoa.
By the way, that guy got the guy who won. No, they both got two delegates. They each got two delegates. I'm not exactly sure how you win, but you wind up with just half of the loser. But the guy's going to go to. I hope the guy goes to convention and demands like speaking time.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Can't put his name in nomination. I mean, that'd be fun.
So there were some down ballot primaries as well, and there are two incumbents in Alabama paired against each other. Congressman Barry Moore edged out over fellow Congressman Jerry Carl.
Yeah.
Because they were sandwiched together in the same district. So one of those guys is going to be out next year. Arkansas, there was one competitive race. Seven-term rep Steve Womack scored 57% to over State Senator Clint Penzo. Which was 57-43, which was a little bit closer than the incumbent probably imagined. Bunch of stuff in California. We are going to have Senator Shifty Schiff.
Does look
as
that
a California senator.
Does look that way, doesn't it?
Crushing basically Katie Porter
Would you feel better if it was Katie Porter?
I don't know.
Or Barbara Lee? I mean, you know, they. There's a dog's breakfast of candidates right there, man.
Oh, how far has the state of California fallen? Schiff, of course, helped prop up retired baseball star, former first baseman Steve Garvey, who will be the Republican nominee. I still like Steve Garvey.
I'm going to just say this once.
He was a gentleman.
Because I knew you were going to do that crap on me. So I'm just going to say this once, and I want you to listen.
When he was a Padre.
I want you to listen. I want you to listen because it's important. Anybody, and I mean anybody, who's been in the Dodger organization at any point in their career is terrible.
You're contradicting yourself.
It's terrible.
Right now.
Terrible. Terrible. Terrible.
You're contradicting yourself right now because you even had kind words to say about Tommy Lasorda.
No, I never. I never have. I hate that guy. That guy is the worst. He was a goon. He was an instigator. The only Dodger that you were allowed to even say was smart.
Kofax.
No, smart was Oral.
I know you trashed Kofax.
Oral Hershiser. That's it. He's a smart guy.
You liked her. What about Fernando?
No.
What about the?
No, he's another Mexican that the Californians have taken advantage of.
Oh, ouch! All right, so Adam Schiff is going. I mean, there's no way Steve Garvey.
Ladies and gentlemen, you don't get this kind of quality on any other podcast. I just got to say this right now.
Yeah, it all gets edited out at every other podcast. So those folks who are listening need to understand that. There's no way Steve Garvey is going to win, and so I just can't believe I'm saying this, but Adam Schiff is going to be a senator. It's just like
it would have been better. It would have been better if Katie Porter had been second, because that way the two of them would have spent $100 million trying to kill each other instead of trying to kill everybody else. Yeah, yeah. There's just
so a lot of rematches in the down ballot race. District 13, Duarte from Modesto is going. Former Assemblyman Adam Gray, Jim Costa is going to have a rematch with former FBI agent Michael Mayer.
Where's that in Central?
Fresno Valdeo.
That's in the Central Valley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Costa. Fresno. Yeah.
Fresno David Valdeo is facing a rematch. It's going to be a tight one. And we can go on and on and on. It looks like Kevin McCarthy is going to be replaced by a gentleman named Vince Fong. Assemblyman.
Sorry, did you say Vince Vaughn?
Field.
Vince Vaughn? Vaughn?
Vaughn. Not Vaughn. Vaughn. Not Vince Vaughn. That would have been good.
That would have been fun. That would have been. He'd be a fun congressman.
It's because I have a cold. So that you heard Vaughn, not Fong.
I'm gonna keep calling this guy Vince Vaughn and see if anybody
in North Carolina. We have an open governor's primary and a general election that will feature Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson for the Republicans and Attorney General Josh Stein as the Democratic nominee.
In the famous words of somebody, it's kind of a shame they both can't lose.
And
there's a race you don't want anybody to win.
Ted Cruz will not have the what's his name?
Colin Allred.
What do you call him? No.
Beto O'Rourke.
He won't have Beto. What's his
Bob? Patrick, Robert.
What's his
Robert.
Irish name?
Robert.
What's
his Robert. Given name is Robert.
Robert Francis Beto.
Robert Francis O'Rourke.
To mess around with anymore, because U.S. Congressman Colin Allred is going to be challenging Ted Cruz in November.
Yeah.
And Sheila Jackson Lee squeaked out a tough primary challenge.
It's the hair.
So she will still be annoying us for another 2 years at least, after flaming out big time in her quest to be the mayor of Houston.
Houston.
Now, I have one other one, which is interesting. This comes from our good friend Phil Kirpin. Kirpin extra tweeted out that gentle lady named Shelley Luther will be joining the Texas House as a Republican, winning her primary 53 to 46. What is her claim to fame? She refused and went to jail for refusing to close her hair salon in violation of a lockdown order, and she is describes herself as a school choice evangelist. So good on her. You knew Kirpin would pull a nugget out like that. So So that's the big news on Super Tuesday here in presidential politics. The other big news, of course, is Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema will not be running for re-election. She made it official this week. She's out as an independent candidate for that seat.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. You know, I thought she was an interesting senator. I didn't always agree with her, but I will tell you that meetings in her office were uniformly productive and courteous, and that's not common really anymore.
It's not common on either
That's right.
Or either party.
That's right. It's not. Productive and, you know, meetings are sometimes courteous, sometimes productive, but they're rarely both. But, you know.
Well, not everyone feels.
I don't know if she's a good. I don't know if she's a good senator or not. I think she's a good senator. I think if she's hung around and won, I think she had the potential to be a really good senator. I'm certain of one thing, right? I'm certain the two people running for that Senate race, running in that Senate race,
are not going to be as good.
If either one of them becomes senator, they're going to be terrible, insufferable for their own reasons.
Well, the one of them will join the MAGA wing of the Senate. And the other will join the Bernie wing of the Senate. So
yeah, but I mean, it's not. It's personality too, right? You know, JD Vance is in the MAGA wing of the Senate, but you know, he somehow manages to negotiate life without being constantly annoying. I can't imagine that's going to be the case for the Republican candidate from Arizona, right?
Well, not everyone feels like you do about Kyrsten Sinema, Mike.
Okay.
Not everyone. This from the Boston Globe. After much speculation over whether independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema would run this year, after leaving the Democratic Party, the controversial lawmaker announced she would leave the Senate after this term. Will Bernie Sanders of Vermont miss her as a colleague in Congress? Not at all. You don't even go there.
Okay.
Well, we had 48 people in the Democratic caucus. Prepared to transform this country. Two people, Sinema being one and Manchin the other, refused to support us.
Yeah. Wow. I always get nervous when people say stuff like transform this country, right? You know, it's like when Obama said it in the last weeks of the 2008 campaign that we're going to transform this country. I was just like, to what? I'm okay with the way the country is. Wait a minute.
Yeah. So I will not miss Senator Sinema. No. How's my Bernie? Is it getting better?
It's good. Yeah. I have to be honest. He's going to be the most interesting funeral ever. I'm so curious to see who's going to show up and who's going to skip it. I hope I make it.
All right. So one more in politics, and then we can move on unless you have anything.
Oh, my God. No.
This from the Washington Post. Senator McConnell enthusiastically endorses Trump. I added emphasis enthusiastically.
I was going to say.
After years of acrimony. Here's the quote. It's abundantly clear that former President Trump has earned the requisite support of Republican voters to be our nominee president of the United States.
Boy, you might be a good president.
It should come as no surprise that as the nominee, he will have my support.
I said.
Wow!
I said,
thanks, Senator.
I said, boy, you should be president, boy.
Translation: It is painfully clear that we're stuck with Donald Trump as our nominee, and hence I have no choice but to endorse him. So,
yeah, I wonder if he's thinking. I wonder if he ever wonders, like, should he have run like last time? Would it have been better just to walk out the door? Like, hey, you know what? I got the judges. I'm done. Peace. You know,
I think it would have been a much stronger exit. What do they say about leave on top?
Well, you know, that's what Senator McConnell said in his announcement last week. He said, you know, one of the rare skills in life is to leave when you figure out the right time to leave. And I was just like, I hadn't thought about that till this week. I was like,
yeah, you kind of missed it.
I was going to say, maybe you should have.
All right, I'm done with politics. You mentioned the State of the Union. That was also on my list, so I appreciate you watching so I don't have to. Anything else from you?
No, I actually plan on watching hockey and probably reading the transcript. But, you know, I'll tell everybody I watched it because you know how this town is.
Job.
You know, I was going to say, you know how this town is.
I'm sure we'll pull out a few doozies at some point.
I bet you $100 somebody's going to ask me to write a memo off it. Like it's a thing, right? I'm just like, golly, man. Like, it's 90 minutes.
There was a time when I would go to a State of the Union watching thing like that. That was a thing that I used to do.
Well, so. I will say, being in the room is pretty cool. But I also will say this, that the staffers, the White House staffers, who like it was their second or third one, they went in a cloakroom basically. They sat around, they watched it on TV. They sat on benches. They talked about their personal lives. They didn't really watch it. And I thought to myself, yeah, I kind of get it. This is a one and done type deal. I don't know how the members sit through it, man. It's just got to be terrible.
Yeah, well, lately it's been a little less dignified. So we'll see who does the
boy. I hope
overt blaring out of "You Lie" or whatever. Do you want to talk about the spending stuff? We're a little bit off from last week. Looks like they're going to get these bills done without a shutdown, as where we're headed, of course. What it means, though, we're right about this, is that, you know, Democrats are largely going to get their way in this process. So.
That's right. The thing I did not anticipate was that the speaker was going to go suspension of the rules on both of them. It's a good parliamentary maneuver, but it generates a lot of anxiety. And, you know,
I don't think he is somebody who is overly concerned about how long he manages to hang on to this situation.
I think that's right.
And I don't know that that's a bad thing either.
I got mixed feelings about that because I got friends who work for him. And if he doesn't survive, they got to go find different jobs. And I'm like, you know, I think you're right, though. I think he looks at it like, you know what? They're eventually going to throw me out the window. I might as well just do whatever I think I need to do. Right.
But I think that's comes from somebody who's, you know, grounded, you know, who there are things that are more important in life. So I'm wrong on that, but that's kind of where I'm going with this is
I'm not sure what could be.
You know,
more
if he's meant to be the speaker for a while, he will be. And if he's not, he won't. And I don't know that's a terrible thing. So. Anyhow, so we're gonna see the first tranche of these spending bills passed this week, right, in the House?
We're gonna see them in House is voting on it in approximately 20 minutes. It's gonna pass 350-85, and then the Senate's got till Friday night to dispose of it. But I think they're gonna try to vote on it tonight, which is why
is
why all of us little boys and girls who want to get language in like are late. So
the real question now is what happens with this supplemental, with this big foreign aid package, or what happens if anything? Because that's really all that's left to adjudicate from this whole process, right?
Yeah, I imagine what's going to happen is president's going to call for its passage tomorrow night, right? This is going to be
this is going to
be really important. And everything that all the policy riders that didn't ride on the appropriation stuff, all the policy provisions that did not ride on the appropriation stuff are going to ride on the supplemental for obvious reasons, right? You know, president's already made it clear how anxious he is. Senator Schumer's made it clear how anxious he is. So like, okay, you're that anxious? We'll load you up. And the speaker's made no secret of the fact he wants to do border security on that thing. I could easily see us spend 2 months on that bill. I could see that freezing up the system for 2 months while we go back and forth. Because they are far apart, and the Republicans' general attitude is, I don't care if we ever get this thing done. And that's a good attitude to have going into negotiations.
Yeah, we'll see how long
I think it'll last. I think there's not a lot of nobody is going to go home and hear a lot of anxiety about, you got to give the Ukrainians money.
You know, no, I understand that part, but my question then becomes, what are they going to do with FY20 25 because if it's two, 3 months locked in,
we're gonna
with this conversation, we're gonna be right back where we were.
We're gonna go right to just the listeners don't care about this, but I do. We are at request time for FY25, so they're gonna roll right into the FY25 process. They're gonna roll the budget out for FY25 now, essentially. Before the president coughs up his, the House is going to cough up theirs. We're live on 25 right now. So, like I said, nobody cares about that except the guys who do this. But I think we're going to get out of the gate quick. I don't think it's going to change what happens at the end, though. I think at the end we're still going to be looking at a CR next March.
And what about the just to round this out? What about the mini tax bill that was cobbled together?
Yeah, the thing that's still
the corporate goodies for child credit.
Yeah, the thing that's still sitting over there.
Dead? Not, alive?
Not,
which is it?
Not yet. It's still alive, but it looks like it's not going to happen. The longer it sits out there, the harder it is to justify.
All right, folks. So hold us accountable for our prognostications here.
Just realize you're getting top dollar lobbying here for free.
Honestly, we should be charging for this.
Seriously, this is ridiculous. You got guys in town charging $50,000 for this, and they're getting it wrong. We could be wrong for half that price.
AmericanEnergyAlliance.org. There's a button on the top right corner that says donate. That's how you can help. Okay, so you brought me this to my attention from an outfit called Heat Map.
Yeah.
Why a carbon tax is back on the table. Climate policy has been all over the place lately, thanks to pressure from interest groups, pre-election jitters, and the plausibility of a reelected President Trump lying waste to existing climate policy. But further in the future, beyond the ups and downs of electoral politics, there's a policy cataclysm coming that some hope could create an opening for that long-sought, always-denied dream of climate policy, the carbon tax. So this gentleman's hypothesis is that the Trump tax cuts, which expire, will require huge amounts of revenue and won't be enough from clawing back the IRAs and some other things. And since Trump has already sort of teased out, and his folks like Bob Lighthizer and others have already embraced carbon border adjustment taxes and whatnot, that there could be some grand bargain on carbon taxes.
Yeah.
And this keeps you up at night, Mr. McKenna, is my understanding from your little note on your email.
No, he's not wrong. The bottom line is carbon taxes score, depending on what you set them at, score, $1 trillion, something like that. And we're looking at a $4 trillion hole now, to re-up the TCJA and do the child tax credit and do the expensing stuff. And, if you want to throw the salt in there, throw in another couple hundred billion dollars in the window. So we're already $4 trillion in the ditch. That's not the kind of money that you're just going to find, in the couch. So this is, in fact, the moment where you're probably at most risk of getting a carbon tax. I believe this person is right.
All right. So a couple of other points. White House, our good friend, Senator White Beach House, spoke at a Brookings event last week saying, "We'll find out a lot when people start getting tariffed through the European Union CBAM," and that even Republicans were pricing curious due to the specter of carbon taxes. "The forces are converging on making that work," he added, about the idea of finally getting a carbon tax of their own. And some MIT lady said, "We have tried since 2009. That's 15 years ago," she said. "The climate continues to change, and it's changed pretty dramatically in the last 15 years. I don't think we should have too many conclusions about what's possible."
Yeah. The reality of it is that the Democrats still have an ancestral aversion to to carbon taxes. They believe that the BTU tax is what sunk Clinton in 93, right? Would cause the washout in 94.
I think it contributed pretty significantly to it.
It sure didn't help, right?
Not what sunk them.
But I'm not inclined to correct the record on this one, right?
Right.
So, which is why, with a couple of notable exceptions, Senator Whitehouse being one of those exceptions, right, who are in favor of, who have introduced carbon taxes, right? Most of the Democrats look at that with some terror. And if I was a Democratic senator running for office, if I was John Tester, if I was Sherrod Brown, if I was Ruben Gallego, if I was Jackie Rosen, I'd be like, would you please shut up? Because you're putting me at some risk here. Bob Casey, right? I would love to make each and every one of those campaigns a referendum on carbon taxes.
Honestly. I forgot to mention this in the politics rundown. Rosendale is not running for the Senate seat.
Who thought he was?
Well, he announced and then he pulled back like a day later.
I hesitate to point this out because it makes me sound trivial and not completely whatever, but I have been saying forever that he was not going to run, and here he is not going to run. The guy's not from Montana. He's from New Jersey, I think. I mean, there's limits even in Montana to what you can get away with.
All right, I want to play a couple of clips from the guy. He just won't go away. He said he was going away, but he won't go away. How long do these goodbye things last?
Tom, don't be afraid of the transition. Don't be afraid of the transition.
Here's one. Here are two from what we hope to be his last going. I'm going to leave the administration press conferences.
I intend to not move away from this fight while I'm leaving the job that I'm in today. I believe I'm going to liberate myself to actually be more engaged in the transition itself, trying to accelerate bringing the capital to the table, bringing the partnerships that are necessary. It's labor intensive, it takes people on the ground, but we have to create the bankable deals that will excite that capital so we can begin to grow in a different direction. And we will wind up with a world that is safer, that is more prosperous, that is cleaner and healthier. And no one should doubt that that's the other side of this journey of transition. It's positive. It's not something to be scared of. It's something to embrace.
All right. So I mean, what is it with these old guys? Like they have to announce that they're not really going. I mean, while I'm leaving this post, I'm going to be as active as ever. I'm literally going to liberate myself to actually be more engaged.
Yeah, he's going to liberate himself to go to the early bird buffet, and that's fine. Closing in on 80. He lived a long, useful, fruitful life. He served in Vietnam. He served his country well. It's time to sit down now. Just move along, man. Move along.
We have so much work to do, and I intend to corral those money people all over the world.
Very rarely do I see the world through the eyes of millennials or Xers or Zers. But when somebody like Secretary Kerry does something like this, I'm just like, man, I kind of get it. It's just like, dude, would you please just go away?
Yeah, 100%.
It's perfectly okay for you to play golf at this point in your life.
All right, so that was just annoying. This is really weird. This is from Russia with Love.
I believe that Russia has the ability to be able to make enormous changes if it really wanted to. I mean, if Russia has the ability to wage a war illegally and invade another country, they ought to be able to find the effort to be responsible in the climate issue. Unfortunately, because of the actions that Russia took, in an unprovoked, illegal war against another nation, we have not been engaged in discussions with Russia, sadly. I say sadly because it's a loss for the world not to be able to have Russia acting constructively on this issue. But We need every country, including Russia. Russia is one of the largest emitters in the world. If Russia wanted to show good faith, they could go out and announce what their reductions are going to be and make a greater effort to reduce emissions now. And maybe that would open up the door for people to feel better about what Russia is choosing to do at this point in time.
Can you believe this guy was the Secretary of the State of the United States of America? I mean,
it's great.
What planet does this guy live on? They could make us all feel better about Russia at this point in time if they just announced that they were going to cut their carbon emissions.
You know, it makes me think if I was Putin, I would seriously think about, like, just as the spring offensive launches, get up and make some kind of commitment to net zero.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
Just to see what happens.
He could score another. Tucker could score another interview for his major announcement on carbon emissions. So,
I
don't know.
These don't know. Like I said, man, these old guys. It's okay to leave. It really is.
Now, of course, we all know that the older special envoy Kerry is going to be replaced by the younger and more vibrant John Podesta, who will be sitting at the White House. But that isn't going over very well on Capitol Hill. Apparently, just today, EPW?
Tell me who.
Capito. Yeah, EPW, yeah. Ranking Capito and Energy and Commerce Chair Kathy McMorris Rodgers both announced that they're probing the tapping of Podesta to be the next climate czar.
Why?
Because apparently that this position should be up for Senate confirmation.
We'll pass a law and make it up for Senate confirmation. Then what's the probe? This is the fundamental problem of having a Twitter generation run Congress, right? There's nothing to probe. You want to make that happen? You pass a law, the president signs it, or he doesn't sign it. You override it. You don't. But there you go. You don't probe. You just do it. And I will point out that Secretary Kerry was not Senate confirmed for this job. And I will also point out that those very same members, not those two, but members of Congress, basically have tolerated him running that operation as a black works operation right inside the State Department without really any notice at all until about 2 months ago. And they're like, what? I mean, you won't tell us who works for you or what you pay him?
Well, that was also because of some FOIA work.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying. I mean, if I was a member of Congress, that would have been the thing to probe, not whether John Podesta is, you know, a little on the shady side. Everybody gets that. That's what he's there. Am I allowed to say that?
All right.
Am I allowed to say that?
All right. Anything on energy that you want to enlighten our listeners with?
Do I need to say that John Podesta is allegedly a little on the shady side? Should I cover myself legally here?
I don't know.
Okay, he's allegedly a little on the shady side. I myself don't think that, but others think that.
Don Vito Podesta? Come on.
I'm sorry, anything on the energy side?
Yeah.
Not really. You know, the LNG pause is continuing to destroy America's place in the LNG markets as the Qataris have swooped in and swiped all the customers. President Biden continues apace at destroying yet another energy source in America. We got three new FERC nominees, and we're going to figure out what we're going to do with them. And it's going to be a full, rich couple of months here in the energy space.
Another day, another dollar. I've got two articles. One was just really weird. And I wanted to like break it down for you a little bit. It was from the Wall Street Journal, and I had to read it twice because it's all over the place. Hybrid EV demand help boost Ford sales.
Yeah.
That was the headline. Now, we've talked about how Ford has been getting shellacked and taking huge losses on the EV side. So it puzzled me. And so I read it. Ford Motor posted a 10.5% increase in U.S. vehicle sales for February, propelled by strong demand for electric and hybrid models. Ford said nearly one in five buyers of its F-150 pickup truck were hybrid models. The automaker said it plans to double output of hybrid F-150s for the 2024 model year. Overall, F-150 sales dropped about 6%. That was the next sentence. Then it said much of the increase in hybrid sales stemmed from strong demand for the Ford Maverick, a compact pickup truck that has been a hit since its introduction in 2021. Ford sold 13,000 Mavericks in February, a record, and nearly half of those were hybrids. And then the next paragraph goes, like other companies, Ford has been jolted by slowing growth in the EV market as consumer sentiment has shifted and more buyers are flocking to hybrids, which combine a gas engine with battery power. Ford reported a 25% increase in hybrid sales in 2023. By contrast, its electric vehicle sales were up 18% over the prior year. Okay.
Where is this? What?
This is from the Wall Street Journal. It was really strange.
They're not very. Then who wrote this? This is
a gentleman named Mike Colias. Anyhow, this is how the article ends. Ford has spent 2 years pushing to expand its Lightning plant in Dearborn, Michigan, citing a backlog of buyers for the battery-powered pickup. Same paragraph. In January, the company said it was cutting the factory's workforce from two shifts to one and relocating about two-thirds of its 2,100 hourly workers, mostly to plants that make gasoline engine vehicles. Like, this article is all over the place. Very odd.
It is very odd. I don't understand any of it. At the end of it, I'm like, well, okay, what story are you trying to tell me?
It's so odd. So, and then this is one that you sent me. This is from Fortune. Volkswagen hit with two lawsuits claiming a Porsche EV battery triggered the massive 2022 fire that sank a cargo ship with thousands of cars on board.
Yeah, these are going to be important lawsuits. If Volkswagen is held liable for this, people are going to be very dicey about moving electric vehicles anywhere.
Yeah, just for people to refresh people's memory, this big old massive cargo ship sank. So,
it took like 7,000 cars with it or some number like that. Yeah. I mean, because one of the, took a couple of the cars in the belly, caught on fire, and eventually crew abandoned ship and the thing drifted for a while and then finally sank. It was a pretty messy story.
The plaintiffs claim the fire originated from the lithium ion battery of a Porsche model and alleged VW failed to inform them of the danger and necessary precautions needed to transport such vehicles. Although the case was filed a year ago, the judges haven't yet looked into the merits of the suit as the parties have been quarreling about the amount of collateral that must be collected before it can proceed.
Yeah, that thing's going to be a really good trial because, like, there's lots of deep pockets on both sides, so there's going to be lots of good lawyers. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun. I mean, not for the Volkswagen guy, but for everybody else.
But as a reminder, these guys have the fire departments consider these chemical fires, right?
They are chemical fires. And in all fairness, I mean, internal combustion engines light on fire all the time. The difference is they don't spontaneously combust all the time. They light on fire under certain circumstances. The other difference is, of course, you can put them out. You got a fighting chance of putting them out because they're fed by gasoline, right? The EV fires, once they start, they burn out. Like on the boat, it doesn't really matter. Like, what they're around, they just burn out. I would be surprised. I expect the way this thing's going to turn out is the EV guys are going to be found liable. They're going to have to give a bunch of money up. Insurers are going to start charging them. And more importantly, places like garages are not going to allow EVs in because they're going to be worried about liability.
Yeah, so where does that leave us? Because almost all EV sales are coastal elites who either live in big cities and have fancy condos or apartments.
Yeah, it's going to be a thing. I also kind of wonder, you know, say you're Joe Nobody sitting there charging you up your EV charging up your EV at a charger. I don't know. Let's say in your office, right? Let's say in your office building, you're sitting there in the garage, right? And it lights on fire, and it takes the office building with it. I mean, are you liable? Are they liable? Who's liable here? It's going to be messy. You know, like it always is when lawyers get in the middle of it. It's messy. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
All right. I got one more thing. And then speaking of firefighters, I have a doozy of a close for us. So I'll turn it over to you if you've got anything else on your list.
The only thing I have on my list is that our good friend Lou has commended us while we were actually doing this right now. Our good friend Lou has commended us for putting on Mr. Brook last week. That's all I'm going to say. So Lou, you're welcome. We're always looking for new perspectives, but people usually are too afraid to kind of mix it up with us. So that's good.
Oh, absolutely. Appreciate that. Okay. As I was doing my research, I stumbled on this tweet and I had to go like see if it was real because I didn't believe it. So I went to the website of the Doritos brand of delicious snack foods.
Yeah.
And you know, they have wonderful flavors like old school nacho cheese, and it, you know, goes up from there. Do you want to hear what their about us section says? Can I read it verbatim, please?
It's Doritos, right?
Yes, it's Doritos.
Yeah, go ahead.
Doritos isn't just a chip.
Keep going.
Notice the pause.
Is there more?
It's fuel for disruption. Our flavors ignite adventure and inspire action. With every crunch, we aim to redefine culture and support those who are boldly themselves. Are you ready? If so, crunch on.
Did you send a note to the
This is the Doritos website. I'll put it in the show notes if you don't believe me.
Did you send him a note back saying I just wanted a tasty snack chip? What the hell is wrong with you people?
Okay.
So just in case you think it's you that's crazy, it's not you that's crazy. It's them that's crazy.
Yeah. All right. That's it for me. I'm going to close with our beloved regular here on the Unregulated Podcast, the Vice President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen.
I know that one of the best ways we're going to keep our firefighters safe is to have more firefighters, to be able to work on the job with you, to be able to do the work that is about putting the resources into what the communities need.
Ladies and gentlemen, Vice President Harris, the Doritos of American politicians.
And that is a wrap, ladies and gentlemen, for episode number 172 of the Unregulated Podcast. Enjoy your week. Congratulations, President Trump and President Biden. I'm so excited for the rematch.
The light in me sees and respects the light in you. Namaste.